Good afternoon. May it please the court. I am Assistant Attorney General Catherine Smith, representing the appellant, the Colorado Department of Revenue Division of Motor Vehicles. The issue before the court today is whether the district court erred when it held that the DMV must establish that the initial traffic stop was supported by reasonable suspicion before revoking a driver's privilege to drive. The district court's ruling should be reversed on two grounds. The first ground is that as a matter of statutory interpretation, reasonable suspicion is not an element of a civil driver's license revocation. The second ground for reversal is that Fourth Amendment protections are applied to any parallel criminal proceeding arising from the same conduct. Thus, if there is any additional deterrent effect to be had by applying the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule in a civil driver's license proceeding, that deterrent effect, if it exists at all, is marginal at best. Further, any deterrent effect that may exist does not outweigh the significant social cost measured by serious injury and loss of lives, the suffering extracted by intoxicated drivers. Driving is a privilege, not a right. Individuals are conditionally granted the privilege to drive. Under Colorado's express consent law, one of the conditions of that privilege is that every driver take a chemical test when asked by a law enforcement officer with probable cause to believe that the driver is intoxicated. There are two elements of a civil driver's license revocation. The first element is that a police officer with probable cause to believe that a driver has been operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated asks the driver to take a chemical test. The second element is that the driver refuses to take and complete the chemical test, or the chemical test establishes that the level of alcohol in the driver's blood exceeds legal limits. Fourth Amendment protections are applied routinely in criminal cases, but in civil cases only when the deterrent effect outweighs the substantial social cost. The Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable searches and seizures, but the Constitution itself contains no remedy. The prophylactic protections of the Fourth Amendment are a judicially created remedy, which is not applied reflexively. The purposes of the exclusionary rule is to deter unlawful police conduct. In Ahart, the Colorado Supreme Court established a two-part balancing test, which is applied to determine whether any deterrent effect which may exist outweighs the social cost. The first Ahart factor is whether the allegedly improper conduct is inter or intra-sovereign. Conduct is intra-sovereign when the same officials or the same agency that conduct the investigation seek to use the results of the investigation in an adjudicative proceeding. Gallatin police officers are not agents of the DMV. They are not hired by the DMV, and the DMV has no authority to dismiss a law enforcement officer.
Ms. Smith, aren't the Littleton police officers, though, submitting affidavits on behalf of the department?
The Littleton police officers submit affidavits to the department, which the department uses in order to determine whether or not the driver's license will in fact be revoked. The court has looked at this issue in a case called In the Interest of AEL, which was a dependency and neglect proceeding. There, the court held that the Denver Police Department and the City and County of Denver are separate sovereigns. Similarly here, the Littleton Police Department and the DMV are separate sovereigns.
Was that case decided in this context?
It's a civil proceeding.
Right, but was the AEL court just determining whether a police officer was dealing with a driver's license revocation proceeding was a different sovereign from the City and County of Denver?
There are no cases in which the AHRQ test has been applied to a driver's license proceeding. The only case in which the AHRQ test has been applied, the only civil case, is this case in the interest of AEL, and that's a civil dependency and neglect proceeding. Even if the court concludes that the conduct here is in fact intra-sovereign under AHRQ, this factor is not dispositive. The AHRQ court was looking at a case in which the very same officials who improperly ordered drug testing then sought to use the drug test results in employee discharge proceedings. The Colorado Supreme Court, after weighing the social costs, admitted the drug tests into evidence. The second factor under AHRQ is whether the proceedings are quasi-criminal. A proceeding is quasi-criminal when it provides for punishment. Here, the DMV does not impose substantial fines, and it is the parallel criminal case that may result in jail time. The DMV takes remedial measures encourage behavioral change or to protect public safety by restricting or removing the privilege to drive.
Counsel, I want to be clear. I think you're asking us, though, to rule contrary to the rulings of other divisions of this court, going back to the Peterson case, but more recently in the Baldwin case. I mean, in those cases, the court said that a driver may challenge the reasonableness of a stop.
I think 2 points. The Peterson case is decided before AHRQ, and we don't have any cases that apply the AHRQ test, which is the test that the Colorado Supreme Court says applies when determining whether or not the exclusionary rule will apply in a civil context. The other point that I would make is that Peterson, what it says is that the driver may raise the issue as a defense. The question that's been posed here is whether or not reasonable suspicion is an element of a driver's license proceeding. In other words, does the Department of Motor Vehicles need to establish reasonable suspicion in order to have its prima facie case? To the extent that the court is concerned,
what is the difference between those 2 points? I hear what you're saying, but isn't the result the same? Whether it's an element or a defense, if there's no reasonable suspicion, doesn't the driver win in both cases?
I think that in terms of the burden of proof, there would end up being a difference as to whether or not it's an element versus whether or not the driver has to establish.
Well, I understand that, but if there's no, let's assume as a hypothetical that there's no reasonable suspicion, and if it's a requirement under the statute and the department can't prove that there was reasonable suspicion, then the department would not be able to revoke a driver's license. On the other hand, if it's a defense that a driver could raise and it's not an element of the offense, then the driver could successfully raise that as a defense in his or her behalf and would presumably prevail if there was no reasonable suspicion.
Right.
So I don't understand what the difference is. I mean, I understand that there's a difference, as you're suggesting, with regard to the burden of proof, but practically I'm not sure whether there's a difference.
Okay. One slight correction I'd like to make to the question as you framed it. The reasonable suspicion is not an explicit element of a driver's license revocation. If you look at the criminal laws which deal with DUIs, their reasonable suspicion is explicitly an element, and the Colorado legislature created tandem schemes, a criminal scheme and a civil scheme. In the civil scheme, there's no explicit requirement for reasonable suspicion. And in addition, the driving license statutes provide that the criminal proceeding is distinct, and that the outcome of the criminal proceeding is not determinative as to the outcome of the civil proceeding.
But the driver's license revocation statute doesn't, if it doesn't, although it doesn't use the phrase reasonable suspicion, does use the phrase probable cause.
The driver's license statute does use the phrase probable cause, but I think the proper reading of that is that there are two distinct legal determinations that could be made. One is reasonable suspicion as to whether or not the stop was lawful, and the second one is whether the police officer has probable cause to believe that the driver has been operating a motor vehicle with excessive blood alcohol. And that probable cause requirement that's in the DUI civil statute, the revocation statute, is explicitly probable cause as to believe that the driver has been operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. The purpose of the civil DUI statutes is remedial, and the purpose is to get the driver off the road and to initiate behavioral modifications.
Ms. Smith, let me, since there's limited time left, let me ask you about another question about the statutory interpretation, following up on Judge Jones' question. I mean, since you said at the outset one of your issues that you were going to address is statutory interpretation, what do we do with the fact that the Peterson case was decided in 1992, and there have been a series of cases from the Court of Appeals saying that a driver may challenge whether or not there was reasonable suspicion for a stop?
Well, I don't think that the court necessarily has to overrule Peterson. If you look at Ahart, Ahart establishes control on the police officers by saying that if their conduct shocks the conscience, then the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule could still apply. So in there's the option for the court to really clarify its ruling in Peterson and to hold that the driver may still raise as a defense the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule when the conduct of the law enforcement officer shocks the conscience.
When you say raise as a defense, what you mean is argue that the evidence of intoxication should be suppressed as fruit of an illegal stop, right? You don't mean a statutory defense.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. I would like to save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is John Scott. I represent the appellee, Mr. Tom Francine, who is present in the courtroom here today. Your Honor, the order of the hearing officer revoking Mr. Francine's license was arbitrary and capricious. It was a failure on the part of the hearing officer to follow the law, and by virtue of the non-exclusion of evidence in this case, had the hearing officer actually properly followed the law in place at the time of this hearing, there would have been no evidence to support a revocation, so therefore it would have been unsubstantiated by the facts of the case as well. The appellant has raised two issues before the court here today. The first one is whether the driver can raise reasonable suspicion for the initial traffic stop in the driver's license revocation proceedings. And the second was whether Officer Schmidt, in fact, had reasonable suspicion to effect a traffic stop on Mr. Francine on the night in question. I would like to speak on that second issue just very quickly. It's been briefed. I think the court can dispose of that issue in relatively short term. Officer Schmidt testified unrebutted testimony that he was not able to identify any violation of the law. There was, in fact, a factual finding made by hearing officer Christine Wood in paragraph 6 of her order that there was no suggestion of any criminal activity which took place during this encounter. The standard of review with regard to factual determinations in circumstances such like this is that the court may defer to the factual findings of the administrative hearing officer if they are supported by competent evidence in the record. Again, the testimony of Officer Schmidt that he did not suspect any criminal activity and did not observe any traffic violations was unrebutted. Therefore, I think the court may dispose of that issue based upon the actual factual findings and conclusions of hearing Officer Wood.
Counsel, on that point, it seems to me that of course, as you know, Fourth Amendment encounters can be justified a number of ways, right? You could have probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed. You could have reasonable suspicion for a Terry stop. You could have just a citizen encounter, just a consensual encounter, and also a public caretaking stop under Cady against Dombrowski. Why don't the facts here objectively support a public safety stop under Cady?
Because at this point in time, Your Honor, when the stop was actually made, there was Mr. Francine's vehicle was lawfully stopped at a red traffic signal. There was another vehicle next to him lawfully stopped at the red traffic signal. His passenger briefly got out of the vehicle, knocked on the window next to him, got back into his vehicle while the traffic signal was still red. At that point in time, Mr. Francine proceeded when the green arrow signaled to green, and he was immediately stopped by Officer Schmidt. The show of authority during the course of the stop was clearly a show of police authority in that he was stopped by a marked police patrol car that was activated its overhead lights. That show of authority of itself was a stop that would constitute an actual seizure under Terry and the other cases.
Sure. But I mean, I guess what I'm wondering is if it's 2 a.m. and the police officer sees someone get out of the car and go to the car next door, it would be reasonable, wouldn't it be objectively reasonable to infer that the driver or the passenger needed something because they went next to the car next door while at the light and asked for something or apparently had some reason to do it. So why wouldn't the police officer be justified in just stopping the car and inquiring whether they needed something?
Well, Your Honor, the actual test for a traffic stop is based essentially in Colorado Revised Statute 16-3-103, which basically states that a police officer has to be able to reasonably articulate that he observed or that he reasonably believed that criminal activity was occurring, had occurred, or was about to occur before he can actually effect that stop. There is no testimony and no facts in this case to support anything but his intention to stop him, to simply ask questions as to why he was stopped. There was no testimony associated with any welfare check or anything else, Your Honor. So those aren't facts that are before this court. With regard to the applicability of reasonable suspicion, Your Honor, as Judge Tallman has noted, there's a series of cases, and the other judges as well, there is a series of cases that have stated that a driver in a express consent revocation hearing may raise a lack of reasonable suspicion as a defense within a Department of Motor Vehicles express consent revocation hearing.
Mr. Scott, are you then conceding that showing a reasonable suspicion is not part of the department's case in chief, but instead is a defense to be raised by the driver?
I'm not, Your Honor, because also within Peterson v. Tipton, the Peterson v. Tipton court back in 1992 also stated specifically that implicit within the requirement for probable cause is the requirement that they establish reasonable suspicion as well, Your Honor.
All right, so just practically speaking, in a hearing, if the department does not produce evidence relating to the initial stop, then the defendant can simply say, Your Honor, we ask for dismissal because it hasn't shown an element of its case.
Yes, Your Honor, absolutely. And I would offer that that's been the practice prior to this contemporaneous period, Your Honor. In addition to the Peterson v. Tipton case, Your Honor, and again, in Peterson v. Tipton, the court stated that taken together, that the department must also find that there is reasonable suspicion that the court went on to say, so as to justify the intrusion into the individual's personal security. And so they're clearly recognizing the need to establish reasonable suspicion as an element of probable cause that's in itself rooted within the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States and Article 2, Section 7 of the Colorado Constitution.
Counsel, I did some research and I came up with more than 30 civil statutes which use the phrase probable cause in a variety of contexts, none of which have anything to do with the Fourth Amendment whatsoever. Why should we assume that this one does?
Because, Your Honor, in the context specifically associated with probable cause in the DMV, in the express consent revocation statute, it states that if a law enforcement officer has probable cause to believe that a person should be subject of license revocation for excess BAC. Within the statute itself, they don't define probable cause in the statute, but by virtue of the addition of the language for excess BAC, what they're actually saying is that their probable cause to believe that the person's blood alcohol, by definition, would be above a 0.08, which is the same cutoff, Your Honor, for the presumptive level for a DUI under the criminal statute as well.
But why does the mere mention of probable cause in that context, not relating to the initial stop, constitute some kind of a wholesale application or of the Fourth Amendment?
Your Honor, with regard to the context that is presented right here, a division of this court in Peterson v. Tipton as far back as 1992.
I know what the division said. I'm asking why that makes sense, frankly.
It makes sense, number one, Your Honor, because the law enforcement, a police officer, is the same one applying the probable cause standard under both statutory schemes at the exact same time under the exact same set of facts.
So why isn't your argument that the officer must have probable cause to pull over the driver, because that's the term that's used?
Because what's happening at this point within the DMV hearings, Your Honor, is we're skipping the whole notion as far as the legality of the stop in the first place. And from the briefs, the court can say that this can see that the appellant spent an extraordinary amount of time talking about what the probable cause was. My position, Your Honor, is we never get to the probable
cause. They talk about what the reasonable suspicion was.
No, Your Honor. They talk about the probable cause being all the indicia of intoxication. They spend several pages
context, yes.
And what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that that whole process simply glosses over the notion that there is, by case law in this state as well, the obligation that they establish reasonable suspicion for that initial traffic stop.
Right, and what is there in the statute that says anything about that?
It's been the interpretation in the case law, Your Honor, starting with Peterson v. Tipton and followed by numerous cases thereafter, including Hampi v. Tipton, Chaffron v. Cook, Baldwin v. Huber, Morris v. Huber, which was an unpublished opinion just from 2009.
Have any of those cases tried to apply the Ahart factors?
No, Your Honor.
Well, that's a binding case on us. That's Colorado Supreme Court. We have to follow it.
Your Honor, it's not binding on this court in this context. Because
why not?
Because in this context, this court or any other top court in the state of Colorado has not yet applied the facts at issue in this case under an Ahart analysis. And certainly, Your Honor, I can talk about the an Ahart analysis as well. My position at this point in time is that by virtue of this existing case law, the department failed to follow the law within the state of Colorado, and the law in the state of Colorado has an underlying obligation to find that there was reasonable suspicion for the initial traffic.
The argument is that we don't need to get to the question about what to do under the Fourth Amendment's exclusionary rule analysis, because there is a legislatively mandated inquiry into the legality of the initial stop.
That has, in fact, been vetted through the courts of appeals in the state, Your Honor, that has yielded essentially the judicial rule, in fact, at this point, that the Division of Motor Vehicles needs to establish reasonable suspicion for the initial traffic stop. Your Honor, if I may speak, the counsel had spoken briefly about the the matter of AEL, having applied the Ahart factors previously. I would offer to the court that that case had nothing to do with the Division of Motor Vehicles. It involved a woman who had two young children and a live-in boyfriend, and the live-in boyfriend was on probation for some felony offense. The probation officer had done a visit and had determined that the children were at risk, anticipating that there was drugs and paraphernalia within the residence. The probation officer had asked law enforcement to do a welfare check within the residence, and at that point in time, during the course of the welfare check,
the dependency and neglect proceedings followed as a result of the perception of the Division of Human Services feeling that those children were at risk due to the existence of drug paraphernalia and a white powdery substance that, although never tested, the police anticipated was methamphetamines, Your Honor. So contextually, that case was very different than the case here. With regard to the other factors, though, Your Honor, I think even if the court were to decide that it needed to apply the AHER factors, which under existing law, I'm not conceding at this point, Your Honor, but under the AHER analysis, with regard to it being intra, intra-sovereign, there's ample references within the express consent statutes that talk about what law enforcement has to do for the Division of Motor Vehicles and the things that they must do on behalf of the Division of Motor Vehicles. Law enforcement has the authority to actually revoke, issue the notice of revocation themselves, and then they forward all of their information to the Division of Motor Vehicles. The Division of Motor Vehicles, whenever a hearing's been requested, could never sustain a revocation without the participation of law enforcement. It's essentially law enforcement that drives the revocation process because they're the ones that have to present the evidence to sustain the revocation itself. So to say that they are not working together is difficult for me to swallow, Your Honor. In addition, there are different analyses of what is a sovereign. Within the AHRQ, they're talking about within the same governmental, not even state level entity, they're talking about the prison bureau. In Janus, the origin of the test in the AHRQ case, they're describing sovereigns as the state and as the federal government. There was a state arrest that resulted in evidence that was turned over to the Internal Revenue Service, and there was a federal tax, civil tax case that resulted. When they're talking about the deterrent effects in that type of a situation, they were finding that there was no deterrent value as to that state law enforcement with regard to the federal civil tax proceedings, because they would have no idea what was going on with that. The level of deterrence was very low. In the proceedings within the Division of Motor Vehicles, the deterrence level is extraordinarily high because that police officer sits right there, and it's his testimony that's going to serve as the basis of a revocation or not a revocation. And when the hearing officer determines that you failed to establish reasonable suspicion, it has a tremendous deterrent effect, because in the future, that law enforcement officer is going to go out and he's going to do things the right way. With regard to, I had briefed the quasi-criminal and so forth, that's, I think, adequately briefed. I would like to add that there are penalties imposed by the DMV that aren't necessarily imposed through the courts. When somebody gets arrested by a law enforcement officer, and in this case, for example, where the county court case was thrown out, yet Mr. Francine has received the revocation. If he were to pick up another driving violation while under revocation, at that point in time, he would be subject to a mandatory minimum 30-day jail sentence that he would not have been subject to had he not had an express consent revocation, even though the criminal case was thrown out. And I see my time has expired. I thank the court.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to address two points, one having to do with reasonable suspicion and also just to explore AHRQ and the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule a little bit more with you. The Fourth Amendment is not arbitrary, by which I mean that the application of the Fourth Amendment is not determined by the knowledge or of the police officer, so that any statements made by a police officer as to whether or not an actual criminal violation occurred are not determinative for these purposes. Under Cherry, when viewed objectively, a police officer who observes conduct that constitutes a misdemeanor traffic infraction has reasonable suspicion to initiate a traffic stop, and that is what occurred here. AHRQ, as you know, is the Colorado Supreme Court that establishes the test and is the touchstone for whether or not the Fourth Amendment exclusionary rule applies in a driver's license revocation proceeding.
But that only applies, we will only get to that if we were to first determine contrary to Peterson and the line of cases following it, that the statute itself doesn't require reasonable suspicion.
Correct. Correct. So assuming that that's where we are, under Ahart and that balancing test, what we're looking at is balancing the Fourth Amendment interests of a person who's been granted the conditional privilege to drive and who nonetheless drives while intoxicated. Here, the driver admitted to having three drinks, failed roadside sobriety tests, and had a blood alcohol content of 0.115.
Ms. Smith, in your view, in that applying that balancing test under Ahart, is that a legal determination or a factual determination or both?
I would say it's a mixed question of fact and law.
So if Ahart were to apply, would we have to remand this case for a factual determination of the costs and benefits of the deterrent effect of the application of the Fourth Amendment here?
Yes, you would, Your Honor. I see that my time is up.
Thank you. This case will be deemed submitted and a written opinion will issue in due course. Concludes the arguments. Thank you both for your helpful arguments.